Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I am Jim Galante, along with Mr. Thomas Frank Carr. T. Frank, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jim?
Very good. Ready to talk some Penn State football with you. I know that you got into this second scrimmage, so you've got lots of thoughts on that. Can't wait for that. First, though, I've got to name our winner from the Ask Greg segment, and that is Kevin from Milwaukee. He will be getting the barbecue package from the Tailgate Club. And now we have T. Frank Carr. For those of you who didn't hear us last week, T. Frank will be now joining us on the Keystone Sports Network on a regular basis here on the Keystone Kickoff Show, which is fantastic. For those of you who haven't gotten a chance yet, you got to see some of his scouting reports, video on his YouTube channel, which is Let Me Be Frank. Got to look it up, or even better yet, you just go to your Keystone Sports app. There's a button right there that'll take you right to his videos on YouTube. You can't miss it. You got the app, go right there. And if you don't have the app, why the heck not? Come on, it's free. Just search on Keystone Sports on your app store and you can be ready to watch all of his videos. T. Frank, let's talk about the scrimmage last Friday. I know you had a lot of impressions. Let's start with Curtis Jacobs, the young linebacker who's been making an impression all spring, apparently. And I guess you saw some of that evidence on Friday night.
Yeah, it's hard not to be impressed with him because of his ability to play in every direction. So that's the biggest thing. And this is one of the things I talked about in one of my previous videos of Brandon Smith moving from the position Curtis Jacobs is playing now back into the box. He plays in space, which is really hard to do, and as a former safety, moved to linebacker in high school, he's got the range to play. But what we saw this weekend was plays behind the line of scrimmage, tackles for loss, blitzes. He's a multi-dimensional tool, and it's a scrimmage, sure, and it's a small sample size, but what he shows are just insane levels of instincts of how to get to the football. And that's a really impressive and useful thing so that he can be on the field in a lot of different ways doing a lot of different things.
And I think sometimes fans will see the couple highlight plays that he made in the backfield or hear about them from this scrimmage, and they think about him in those terms, when the reality is he's playing on the side as a linebacker where he's going to have coverage responsibilities, and Brandon Smith is moving to the other side. I know we've talked about this before on the show, but could you just spend a minute explaining to us what that means for those two linebackers?
Yeah, so really this is what a lot of Penn State fans wanted last year, which is Brandon Smith to play in the box, to play between the tackles and to be downhill attacking running backs and chasing down running backs in the backfield. So Curtis Jacobs is going to be lining up more as a slot hybrid defender. And I have this 11th defender theory that there are 10 starters on defense, and their 11th guy is just a positional player who doesn't have a position. So whatever player you can find that is talented enough to do the insanely hard things that, you know, Curtis Jacobs is now tasked of doing, of being able to play from the slot, play run defense, play in coverage, cover tight ends, sometimes receivers in zone coverage, anyone who has the ability to do all of those things, that's your 11th defender. But you have 10 spots you need to fill. Brandon Smith is going to the Will linebacker spot, where he probably has a more natural skill set of being one of the 10 regular players that you're used to when it comes to football. He's playing inside the box, he's chasing, he's tackling, and he will have to play in coverage as well. So don't get that wrong. Like if somebody shifts to a four receiver set and he's on the field, he might be covering the slot. So he has enough skill and athleticism to do that, but he's not doing it on a constant basis, and he's not doing it on the wide side of the field where there's so much more space that he has to be aware of and cover and have that feel for spatial awareness. It's a little more condensed, a little more manageable, I think, for him.
And we might be able to see him making more of those splash plays in the backfield that we saw towards the end of last season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. That's exciting for Penn State fans. And again, the assumption, because there were three returning starters at linebacker from last year, the assumption was, well, we'll just see those three guys again. So it's exciting that they put the pieces where they did, and Curtis Jacobs has shown enough that he's going to be that guy with the starting group. Let's go to the other side of the ball and Kevon Lee. The running backs, it's an interesting situation. If everyone's healthy, you potentially have five guys who have experience carrying the ball in big-time college football. But Kevon Lee seems to be separating himself this spring.
Yeah, and this is something where I did another article and did another video on this with Kevon Lee and my kind of confusion of, like, this is a super deep backfield with more question marks than talent sometimes because we don't know what's going on with Noah Cain. And I had somebody who told me that, you know, he's cleared for practice. And it's like, he's not it's 7 months out now from his injury, or six, I think it was 7 months out from his injury, and he's not cleared for contact yet. So are you expecting Noah Cain to be ready to go in September? Until I see him practice, until I see, like, what shape he's in, I can't guarantee that he's going to be the Noah Cain that everyone's used to. Outside of that, it's really an interesting mix of unproven talent and guys that haven't taken a step forward. And then there's Kevon Lee, who, after watching him in person on Friday, I came away with a very different impression than I did in 2020. I thought he was a good but somewhat limited player. He's a little tight as a runner. He has a hard time, you know, moving easily in all directions. He looked much more confident, more nimble, and I think is put me in more of a spot where I'm looking at him more now as a lead back than I did in 2020, where I thought he was a good rotational player but wasn't even the same type of power back that Noah Cain was. He showed much more flexibility. He showed much more fluidity in his movements. And those are just things that you can pick up on that are, you know, first impressions actually matter in those situations, as far as, like, I don't need a larger sample size to see how he moves. I know he moves that way because that's now how he moves. I think that's a very translatable thing to the next year. So I would say Penn State fans should be much more comfortable that even if there isn't another major step up by another running back, he can do enough to carry the team.
And you make a very interesting point in talking about Noah Cain. I think a lot of folks are just under the assumption when he got hurt in 2019, he was the number one guy. And we assumed when Journey Brown was out, start of 2020, here was Noah Cain going to be the number one guy. It's going to be a season and a half, essentially, that he has sat out now. And as you pointed out, it's been 6 months since the injury. We're not sure what we're going to get with Noah Cain, are we?
Yeah, and because it happened on October 24th, even though it was the start of the Penn State season, it was in the middle of the Penn State season of what it normally would be. So the timetable, while in your mind it feels like it happened forever ago, it was technically in the middle of a normal season. So that's why I'm hesitant to, like, group him in with running backs you can count on next year until you see him in fall camp at full go and what sort of shape he's in. Now, by a year from his injury, you know, in the middle of October, he might be rounding into shape. But that's in October. That's not at the start of the season in September. So that's just a question mark in my mind, which then leads to only Kevon Lee being the guy that has fewer question marks than the rest.
Before we move on to the quarterbacks, which I know everybody is always interested in, sticking with the running backs, did you get any impressions for John Lovett, the transfer from Baylor?
He's a good runner, and he's a tough runner, hard to bring down on first contact. Now, again, going up against the second team defense at times, but you know, he's a good elusive runner that it's hard to bring down. And I was pleasantly surprised with what you can get out of the transfer portal from a graduate senior running back, which, you know, you never know what you're going to get there. But, you know, I was impressed.
All right, let's switch to the quarterbacks. We've talked about Sean Clifford so much. You and I have talked about him. I want to talk about Taquan Roberson and what you saw from him, the backup.
Yeah, so there's going to be two parts of this, is what I saw and then the context that it's important to. And this is what I talked about this week in Let Me Be Frank on the YouTube page, is that I wasn't really impressed with what I saw, because both in the 7-on-7 and in the scrimmage portion of the practice on Friday, when he was asked to push the ball down the field, he put the ball in danger at times, and then when he had open receivers, I mean, it was wildly overthrown. Like, it was not within the zip code of the receiver. So in those plays that matter, where he has to be a quarterback, not just delivering the football like catch and throw to a guy on a predetermined route, I didn't come away wowed. But the context is that it was a small sample size and that he was only asked to do it a couple of times. So it's not indicative of his entire body of work. It's just kind of a hint, an allusion into what we're getting, which is what a scrimmage is. So that's the impressions we come away with. But if you saw, you know, reports he was like 11 for 14 in the practice, most of those were check down plays. Most of those were predetermined throws or quick throws into the flat. It wasn't like he was throwing a deep in and hitting a guy in a zone or anything like that. He wasn't throwing corner routes to beat cover two or any of those things. What he was doing was predetermined throws into the flat and a lot of screens. And to me, that's a lot of nothing. Like, if you can't complete those, you're in trouble. So when it came to, like, the things I remembered after the game, it was mostly negative, but I think that characterizing it as a downright terrible day is also wrong. So it's somewhere in between with a lot of things that I'm concerned about going forward.
I think, though, if you combine that, and by the way, that 11 for 14, I think, was for about 70 yards. So that gives you an idea of there weren't completions down the field. As we know in football, one play, one twisted ankle, and all of a sudden, this is the guy who's your starting quarterback. Yeah. Which lends even more credence to the idea of bringing in a transfer. Real quick, in the last minute we have left, let's switch back to the defense. I don't think a surprise to anybody that a cornerback is being moved to safety, and that's Keaton Ellis. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, it was he's been practicing there this spring, but it wasn't a great day. A couple missed tackles, a couple times where he had to come up and run support, and he missed. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's not going to be cut and dried of he's got to take time to learn that. And I think that he's got a similar path forward is that Lamont Wade did, where he can play in the slot. He can play the free safety position. He's got those versatility skills where he can do both. So I think that's his path going forward. He's just got to make sure that he settles in quickly, because this is the most talented secondary that I think Penn State's had in a long time when you count in the transfers and the early enrollees.
And I think another point to make is when you compare Keaton Ellis to Lamont Wade, I think Keaton Ellis has better coverage skills.
Absolutely, 100%. Yep.
I really hope that he does. That is it. The segment always goes so fast, T-Frank. Remember, T-Frank's going to be showing up more often with his scouting reports. We got some great reaction from folks about that. We will continue to do that. And go to the app. You'll see the button for T-Frank and his YouTube channel. Make sure you hit it. You won't be disappointed. That is it for our show for today. Please be sure to join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.